Gather round wizards, it's time to explore. A world full of magic, we're opening the door. With Dan and Jessica, we're here for the ride. On broomsticks and butterbeer, come along for the glide. Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the sorting hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know.
Welcome back to another edition of Broomsticks and Butterbeer, episode number 167.
67?
Yep. And if you're listening to this in 2030, you're like
next year.
Like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
So there was this craze in 2025 leading into 2026 where all the kids were going 6-7. What did it mean, Jess?
That kids are dumb.
It meant nothing. It was just a kind of a anecdote for how dumb we've become as a society.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we can be not as dumb as the people around us, and we can survive. That's kind of the goal right now. Everybody's dumb. You just try not to be as dumb as the person next to you.
Okay.
That's why I don't sit next to you, because I don't want to seem dumb.
Oh. But...
That's why I've been avoiding you.
Oh.
That's why I make you sit far away when we're recording.
We are pretty far away.
So far away.
But that's because I like to face you.
Doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore?
We're not moving.
Okay.
We're staying in one place.
Okay.
We're just far away.
We're going to be here for a little while.
Probably.
Palatial Rhino Estates. But it is episode number 167. This is Broomsticks and Butterbeer. I'm Dan Rhino.
I'm Jessica Rhino.
And we are continuing our journey through the final book in the Harry Potter saga, that being Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And last time we talked about chapter 4. Today we're going to pick it up with chapter 5. So before we do that, this past weekend, as we sit here in April of 2026, this past weekend we were in Chicago.
On an adventure.
On an adventure, covering C2E2 as members of the press.
Yes.
You had a little hat
we
on.
Very
you had a
official.
Little fedora with press.
Uh-huh. And one of those old-timey cameras.
Say, come on over here. What about an interview? How about a few words for the paper? What were your impressions of C2E2, one of our favorite shows to go to every year? What were your Cliff's Notes?
Oh, I don't know. But so because we're such big podcasters, I was podcasting last night with the girls for the Book Cave.
The Book Cave podcast, available on all podcast platforms.
And we were discussing BookCon, which is also owned by Read Pop. Read Pop runs BookCon and C2E2.
Mm-hmm.
And BookCon is in like, it's in 15, 14 days now. Last night it was 15. Today's 14.
That's how days work.
That is how days work. But I almost said the wrong day just because of what I was talking about last night. Yeah. And I was kind of, I don't know if bragging is the right word, but explaining to the girls how many people were at C2E2 and how it essentially...
Over 100,000, apparently.
Over 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it essentially went off without a hitch.
It is, to their credit, 99% of it is so seamless.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's little things that go wrong that, you know, we just didn't experience. Mm-hmm. I'm sure somebody out there was like, no, I had a horrible time at C2E2 because... whatever.
Yeah.
I pre-ordered my badge and I never got it, and I was sat at will call for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I'm sure there's something.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was 100,000 people there.
Yes.
There had to
possibly be
things.
Be perfect.
But
But it seems so it much more
runs so well smoothly. Run
than the upcoming book con that you're talking about.
Yes, and same company.
It makes no sense to me, all of the issues that you've had with ticketing and with the scale of the event, which is going to be so much smaller than in the past.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and immensely smaller than C2E2.
Yeah, like probably like a tenth.
And I just don't understand. We were talking about it last night, and I said, I hope now that C2E2 is over, mm-hmm. and those people are all done planning, some of them will start planning for next year already, I'm sure, because events that large take a long time to plan. But the other ones, can they just like go down the hall and pop in to BookCon and help them out a little bit?
Three dudes over here. Can you spare three guys?
And I said, and can they take a calculator? Because I don't think BookCon is managing the numbers very well. Mm-hmm. I think they oversold the tickets, and it's going to be rough.
Well, you'll have to report back after you.
Yep. But C2E2 was great.
Make the trip to the Big Apple. Favorite part about, give me three highlights from C2E2.
Three highlights. Mm-hmm. I know we did our trivia a couple years ago mm-hmm. there, and we haven't been picked to do trivia again, but I think next year we are going to pivot and try and offer something else, mm-hmm. not trivia.
Because it's like a Harry Potter fan
meetup or something. Yeah.
And we can still do prizes and giveaways and fun stuff, pictures and stuff like that. I don't charge for pictures. You do.
Yes.
Charge for pictures.
Absolutely.
And it's cash only because you like to skirt the tax man.
I don't have any of the other money apps. I only have PayPal, and that's just eBay credits. So
for the longest time, when I was trying to give her money, I would say, can I PayPal it to you? But she would not.
I didn't have it linked to my bank account.
So it would just sit there unless she would buy something off of eBay. So it was just like basically giving her an eBay gift card. Like, technology is, not our forte. It's really not your forte.
I do okay.
I do stuff
on the interwebs. Anyway, I like that they don't do the same exact things every year. Mm-hmm. I like that they try something new, that they mix it up. One of the new things that they did this year was that drawing thing.
Oh, so cool.
They paid some cosplayers. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they paid them to come, and every hour they just had this area set up on the show floor, and every hour there was
a pretty decent size chunk of
floor. Yeah. Every hour there was a different cosplayer, and they had all the art supplies, everything you could want, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know, not an artist, but they seem to have a lot.
I mean, like fancy pencils, fancy pencils, Russells, color pencils,
pastels, smudgy things. Yeah. You could smudge it together.
Paper, everything. They had
charcoal
canvases,
things,
palettes to put the.
Yeah, they had some clipboards, but then they also had that were like the big, a bigger.
Yeah, I don't know what
clipboardy
was
thing. it's a clipboardy thing.
Like not an easel. I know what an easel is.
Although, yeah, they had the easel stands though.
There were some people doing like watercolors and stuff.
Yeah, somebody
like
brought
that.
Their own watercolor. That they did not have watercolor, but somebody brought their own watercolor.
So it's like every hour they had. Sometimes it was one. Sometimes it was a couple, and they would go up on this like little elevated platform in the middle and had chairs and tables all around it, and you could just go and draw, and they would. What I didn't know is that they did a different pose every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I would start at the feet, and by the time I got up to the head, they had changed the pose. So James. I have a collection of just neck down art that I did that
also
weekend.
I'm not good at drawing people. I'm just not good at it. But if you want to feel really good about yourself, have me draw you, because I draw all my people super skinny.
Yeah, you drew Casey Jones, who is suffering from an eating disorder.
He was very thin.
So I love that. They said they've already been invited back for next year, which is great. What else stood out to you?
They did have some book stuff. The book presence at C2E2 is hit and miss every year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have some really, they have several booths and some really great authors that I know and have heard of, and some years they have like none. And this year was kind of in the middle. They did have a lot of authors there, but it was no one that I knew. But that's how I fell in love with Trisha Levenseller.
Mm-hmm.
She was there at C2E2. I had never heard of her before. She was on a panel. She was talking. I was like, hey, she's cool. I'll buy her book. She's doing a signing. Let's do it. And then she came like the next year and I got her next book. It was a good schedule for her for a little while, because every year she came out with a book like a month before C2E2. So it was just like part of her promotional tour for the book. She would go to C2E2, and then COVID happened and the timing changed and everything got messed up. But it was great for her. I saw her like 3 years in a row. And I'm still a big fan. I'm going to see her at BookCon.
Yeah, you just never know, like,
fingers
who
crossed.
I mean, we've done that with artists a lot, where we would go to shows and we would go to Artist Alley and meet these artists who were up and coming, and we would get sketches hanging on our walls from
most of the art in our
artists.
House is from Artist Alley, where that's like a print, mm-hmm. that they did,
yeah.
or a sketch that they did for us.
But then they get big, hit it big with Marvel or DC.
Yeah. Or Disney.
And then now they go to C2E2, and now the sketch that costs us $50 is now $200 because of how famous they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good opportunity to, you know, meet up and coming artists and authors, mm-hmm. at these shows.
Yeah.
Anything else stood out to you?
No, I am going to type up a little bit on our blog, the Book Cave blog,
okay.
about all the books I got several ARCs. I got a stack of ARCs over there, and there is an author that I went to a panel and I kind of was interested in her books, and she was doing a signing kind of the same as Trisha Levenseller, and I have her books, and that's one of the next things I'm planning on reading. So I was gonna, you know, put all that up in the blog so that you can see the books and the authors and everything.
Well, we are almost 12 minutes in here and haven't talked hardly any Harry Potter, so
Ooh.
We're going to switch to that. But before I do, I want to let everybody know that if you're listening to this as it comes out here at the beginning of April 2026, if you're not doing anything next weekend, I'm going to be in Springfield, Missouri.
Woohoo!
Hosting Harry Potter trivia at Missouri Comic Con. MissouriComicCon.com. You can get your tickets. I'm going to be there on Saturday, April 11th, 2026 at 1:45. Looks like I'm in panel room 3. You're not going to be there because I'm
allergic to cats.
Well, staying with my brother who lives in Springfield, Missouri.
But also I'm staying home with the dogs. And next weekend.
Because you're going to be gone next weekend.
Yeah, the weekend after that. I'll be in New York, and you'll be staying home with the dogs.
Exactly. So you'll hold down the fort this weekend. I'll do it next weekend. But I'm going to be doing Harry Potter trivia at 1:45 on April 11th, 2026 in Springfield, Missouri. Come see me. I don't charge for pictures. Jess won't be there. She does charge.
I don't. Really.
So
he's lying to you.
I am happy to do whatever. I will do anything.
Same thing. Well, I'll be at BookCon. We're not doing a panel or anything, but I'll be running around BookCon. I believe Saturday we will be in our Quest Squad baseball jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see us, say hi.
Sounds good. Chapter 4 we talked about last time of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. I'll recap that real quick. It was called The Seven Potters. Harry is getting ready to leave Privet Drive for the last time. The Order of the Phoenix's plan is to have 6 other members drink a polyjuice potion to make each one of them look like Harry, and they will all escape in different directions, confusing any Death Eaters that might be following, and all rendezvous back at the Burrow. The plan unfurls and immediately goes bad. Death Eaters ambush them in midair. Everyone is trying to protect their Harry, get to their portkeys, and get to the safety of the Burrow. The real Harry uses his go-to spell, Expelliarmus, which is the dead giveaway as to who the real Harry is, and then Voldemort shows up. And he can fly.
I kind of forgot about that. Like, they pointed it out several times in this chapter, and I was like,
oh, he's flying.
Yeah, he was flying. I just, I guess, kind of assumed he was on a broom.
Yeah.
When I was reading, because the action is just go in, and I just kind of, I don't know, pictured him on a broom. But he very clearly wasn't. Everybody's like, what the heck, in this next chapter. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I thought, well, that was just like some weird thing they made up for the movies, because there was that in the movies, mm-hmm. where the Death Eaters could like fly around. And Voldemort looked
a little silly on a broom.
Yeah.
Flying around. Unfortunately, Hedwig doesn't survive the escape. Harry's wand seems to have a mind of its own in fighting back against Voldemort. And Hagrid takes a long fall, potentially to his doom. To make matters worse, we might have a security breach within the Order. So chapter 5 today, Fallen Warrior. We pick up chapter 5 immediately after the chaos of the escape from Privet Drive. And the motorcycle driven by Hagrid crashes into the Tonks family garden. Everyone is shaken up but alive. And we get to meet Tonks' parents. Mm. What did we learn about the Tonks family based on the short interaction here?
We learned that they're very nice, but apparently mommy looks like Bellatrix.
Yeah, there was a moment where mom comes into the room and Harry's ready to fight. But it makes sense that she would look like Bellatrix, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a family connection
yeah.
there. But other than that, we know that they are on the side of the Order. They know of everything that their daughter has been through and how good of a witch that she is, but also how dangerous this whole ordeal is and is going to be. And it's just a brief interaction. I thought it was kind of cool to get a little peek behind the curtain of Nymphadora's
It got
upbringing.
A little weird because they kept calling her Dora. Instead of
the
Tonks.
Explorer,
yeah, and I don't know. It was just giving me like estranged child vibes,
mm-hmm.
like you know when your child the story where the child grows up and makes some life choices and the adult doesn't like it, and I don't know. It just seemed like they didn't know her anymore. If they're calling her Dora and she is so hard set on being called Tonks. I don't know, that's weird. But, I mean, that's their last name, so why would the parents call her Tonks? That's
yeah.
weird, too.
Yeah. Be like if everybody at my house said, hey, Rhino. Hey,
Rhino.
Because that's what people call me. They
yeah.
call me Rhino.
Just not at home.
Just not at home, because that would be
It just threw me off for a second, because I was like, oh, is there, like, some underlining meaning here that they're calling her Dora?
I got the impression that that's our little girl.
Yeah.
And is always going to be our little girl, no matter, you know, what kind of trouble she's fighting against or what kind of danger she's in. She's always our little girl, and we're always going to think of her that way. And they did. That was kind of the vibe that I got from the parents, is that they understand the gravity of the situation, mm-hmm. but they also kind of don't, if that makes sense. I think they understand how important or how dangerous everything is right now, but they also are kind of in like the old fashioned mindset of like, we're still bringing up our daughter and we're still, you know, protective of our daughter, and she's still our little girl. She's not ready to, you know, be out in the world doing these difficult and dangerous things, even though they know that how capable she is. They know in their heart of hearts that she is able to fight in this fight. But at the same time, I'm assuming you always feel like that's your little girl.
Yeah.
You know, forever, no matter how old she gets. You know, my sister's almost 50, and my mom still thinks of her as my little girl. So I think that dynamic never really goes away. So Harry's really overwhelmed here, still processing the fact that he came face to face with Voldemort during the escape. And he can't shake the strange moment when his wand seemed to have a mind of its own without his conscious effort. But Harry and Hagrid use a portkey to travel to the Burrow. As soon as they get there, though, it's a mix of relief and tension. Because Ron and Hermione are there, along with Kingsley and Tonks, but that's it. So more members of the Order start to show up. We start to kind of piece together fragments of the battle based on what the different parties are saying, give us a clearer picture about what happened. And the main conclusion is that the Death Eaters were ready and waiting for them and knew the plan in advance, right?
Yes. Or most, they knew the date. They didn't know the plan. They knew the date.
Right. So finally, Lupin arrives alongside George Weasley, and George is seriously injured. What kind of injury are we talking about, and who actually did the damage?
Snape cursed his ear off with that septum sempra that
yes.
Harry had, which is weird. I mean, I guess because they blasted it off, like literally cut it off with septum sempra, they can't repair it.
Mm-hmm.
But Harry used septum sempra on
Draco,
and Snape healed it.
Maybe Snape
healed
the only
it,
one.
But did you can't like re yeah.
maybe
regrow
Snape's
it?
The only one who knows the antidote to it, since it's his spell.
Maybe.
I didn't even think of that. But apparently...
But there might be a difference between cutting somebody in
yes.
an amputation...
Yes.
With the dark magic involved.
So George Weasley is without an ear, and... It's such a bitter revelation to know that Snape is the one who did this, but it really reinforces the belief that Snape is firmly in cahoots with Voldemort.
Mm-hmm.
It just adds another layer of anger and betrayal.
Did he really believe that that was Harry, or did he mm-hmm. know that that was probably wasn't Harry, but I'm just going to
this is the one
fire at whoever.
This is the one I happen to be in front of right now. I'm gonna go after them in case it is the real Harry.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like I said, it just adds like a layer of anger and betrayal to an already horrible night. And then it gets worse. The Burrow gets the crushing blow. We learned that Mad-Eye Moody had been killed during the escape. And this is especially powerful because Moody was one of the most experienced, one of the most powerful, one of the most vigilant members of the Order. So losing him is a big blow from a physical standpoint. They lost one of their best, most capable fighters. But what do you think the emotional impact is? Because
he seemed so untouchable.
Right. It seems like if it can happen to him, we're in trouble. Like it can happen to any of us.
Yes.
So that's where we get our title from the chapter, Fallen Warrior. Is there anything else about, I kind of cut you off there, but the emotional toll of, yeah, we lost Hedwig and that it was horrible for Harry. But now we've lost Mad-Eye, somebody who has been through so much and come out the other end, whether he comes out with a limp or whether he comes out with
missing something,
missing a body part, he always
comes out
on the other side. And now we see that, oh God, this is, we already knew it was real, but now it's really, really mm-hmm. real. Reality comes crashing down.
When you're reading a book or series, you don't want the characters to die, but it makes it real.
Mm-hmm.
When you're fighting a war, when things are this bad, not everybody's going to survive.
Yeah.
And, you know, she who...
That's just not realistic.
She who must not be named did say that. Like, this is a war... I knew core characters were going to have to not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I mean, there's several book series that I've read that I love. And I do love that the main characters, the main crew, they all survive. And I was not heartbroken. But at the same time.
It's like, I wanted somebody to die.
No, I didn't want them to die. But at the same time.
I wish
time,
they'd just kill somebody already.
It makes it less believable.
I agree.
It's just not realistic that would happen.
For me, it when you said that, the first thing I thought of was Gwen Stacy in the original Spider-Man series. And this, it was in the in the 1970s, I think, where Green Goblin throws Gwen off the bridge and Spider-Man can't save her. And that, like, crushed his world. And to this day, you know, 50 years later, it still impacts the character. It still has an emotional toll on him. You saw that in when they did the most recent Spider-Man movie, when Andrew Garfield sees MJ falling off the bridge. And that's not even somebody from his world. But, like, I got emotional watching that when he saved her, because you knew that he had been over that moment in his head thousands of times. What would I have done differently other than trying to web her?
How, you know, yeah, how, you know, could I have made that successful?
And that was his moment to do it. And when he caught her, he was like, are you okay? And she was.
She's like, yeah, great, thanks.
Yeah.
She has no clue how upset he was and what that meant to him.
But that just shows you that, you know, characters dying sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's so powerful that a story would not be as good without, you know, genuine loss and genuine stakes to have. And like I said, with Spider-Man, it's 50 years later. It still has helped form his character. It's still referenced to. And Gwen Stacy was one of the few, you know, comic book characters that actually died and stayed dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's been like other versions from other, you know, dimensions or whatever. There might even have been a clone or two in there. But when a character dies and it's real, I mean, same thing happened with Captain America and Bucky. I mean, Bucky was dead for 70 years before they finally brought him back. And it was really cool the way they brought him back. But that really shaped Cap's character for 70 years. Mm-hmm. You know, he died in the comics in the 40s. And up till maybe 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when they brought Bucky back as the Winter Soldier, that was a big part of who Cap was. You know, the fact that he wasn't able to save his best friend. So there probably will be a similar impact on the rest of the Order now that Mad-Eye is gone. So you mentioned She Who Shall Not Be Named. I'm going to name her because I'm not scared. J.K. Rowling. Thinking about the author as it relates to this particular death, why do you think she picked Moody here?
Mostly because, yes, it would shake the group, as, like we said, the most, the one that seemed untouchable, uh-huh. The one, durable's not the right word, but
no,
yes,
no,
durable.
No, he gets through everything.
And kind of their leader, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he would bark the orders and everybody fell in line. So, we're shaking the crew up, mm-hmm. with, now they don't have a leader. They've already lost Dumbledore. They don't have a leader. And he was viewed as the strongest, toughest. But also now, same thing, but that messes with their mindset. But now that also does leave them vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
because they don't have this strong player anymore. They don't have a leader at all anymore. So I think it was twofold. One, for the emotional impact,
mm-hmm.
and the psychological impact on the characters, but now it does leave them in a bad position.
And it wouldn't have
so
been
it makes their situation more dire.
It probably wouldn't have hit as hard if it had been like Kingsley.
No, because he's not even in it as much.
Right.
That much. He has a job somewhere else doing something else, and he helps out when he can.
We didn't really have an emotional connection to him like we had with Mad-Eye. So Lupin explains that Moody was paired with Mundungus Fletcher, who panicked during the attack and disapparated. So now the group is feeling a mix of grief and anger at how cowardly Mundungus was. But did anyone really expect Mundungus Fletcher to follow through with the plan and not look out for his own best interest? That kind of...
Not really, because they even say he didn't want to be there in the first place. Right. Mad-Eye was making him be there. And I think it...
So we couldn't find anybody?
It was like Fleur, who was like... Even... When they took off and they were like ambushed and a good chunk of the Death Eaters and Voldemort went after Mad-Eye first because they assumed the real Harry would be with the strongest mm-hmm. defender. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, they said that's enough to make anybody panic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people are coming after you to kill you thinking you're somebody else.
Like the
you
worst,
didn't want to be there.
The worst of the worst is coming at you.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, who would have held their ground?
Yeah. And you're very exposed out there, you know, flying around on a broom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're not even the one in the front of the broom with like a body behind you to, you know, give you a little bit of cushion in case mm-hmm. some spells come flinging your way.
And then they went to, once they realized that wasn't Harry, they went to Kingsley. Because again, one of the more powerful,
mm-hmm.
but he's not there 100% of the time. So he can't even really step up and fill Mad-Eye's shoes completely.
I guess I'm just kind of confused on why Mundungus was even involved here. Like there was nobody else that they could have found. But what he did... How do I probably put this? How did his behavior impact your view of him? Do you think his reaction was understandable or inexcusable?
I mean, we already don't have a high opinion of him. Mm-hmm. He was stealing from Sirius's yeah. house, and it kind of seems to be a theme. She's always got these groups, and there's always that one that's there hanging around, but he's not really on par with everybody else. Kind of snivelly.
Yeah.
Shady. It just kind of seems to be how she sets up her group dynamics.
Yeah, it was kind of like that with...
It's kind of realistic. You know, not everybody is Gryffindor, you know?
Yeah, you think about, you know, James Potter and his crew. You know, the Marauders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had James and you had Sirius and you had Wormtail.
Yeah. And Peter Pettigrew, what happened when worse came to worse? Uh-huh. When things got hard.
He flipped quick.
And I guess he was in Gryffindor, but like, he's not like a true.
Mm-hmm. Just because you're in a house, you know, just because you're in Slytherin doesn't mean that you're Draco.
No.
You know, I'm sure some people in Slytherin are like, hey, man, y'all are doing a lot.
Can y'all just settle down?
Yeah, you're giving us a bad look. Like, I'm just here to learn, man.
Yeah.
So, and not all Hufflepuffs, you know. A Hufflepuff could be turned to the dark side, you know, just as easy as any house.
Mm-hmm. Well, y'all from Cookies.
Uh-huh. We got Cookies. Come to the dark side.
Okay. Yeah, that's part of, I think, her setup. But I also think that adds to the realism of it. Everybody is different
and
has different levels of commitment
mm-hmm.
and different levels of what they'll stick their neck out for.
So Harry shares a detail that really disturbs everyone. During the chase, he used Expelliarmus to defend himself, which is how Voldemort identified him as the real Harry. So talk about why Harry only used Expelliarmus instead of a more powerful or even a deadly spell. And why did that upset Lupin so much?
Well, he was using the jinxes and the curses until he realized that it was Stan.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows...
Stan Shunpike.
He knows him. He knows he's not there willingly, mm-hmm. that he is under a magical influence, mm-hmm. and it just wasn't fair.
Yeah.
He said, I'm not going to stun him. He would then have fallen to his death, and so I wanted to disarm him.
Yeah.
And basically that act of showing mercy is what they all picked up on, the Death Eaters picked up on, and was like, that's the real Harry.
Yeah.
He's going to disarm before fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Yet this set Lupin off because, you know, we're fighting for our lives. And I get, I totally get Lupin's side here. You know, everyone just risked their lives to save Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Mad-Eye didn't make it. George is missing an ear. Like, they're all shook up.
Hedwig didn't make it. Hagrid almost died.
Yeah. And you
not everybody has even showed up at the Burrow yet.
You were taking it easy on people out there.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is war.
This is war. People are going to die.
Like, you don't.
It's them or us. Yeah. You know.
You don't fire warning shots. You don't shoot to wound. You know.
Yeah.
It's in war. There's death. There's killing. It's them or you.
And Harry throws back, well, I'm not just going to go around killing everybody. That's what Voldemort's for.
Yeah.
He's kind of. I feel like there's like a line like, then we'd be just as bad as them, mm-hmm. type deal. Like,
I mean, it's the same thing with Batman. You know, Batman could easily kill the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes him just like every criminal out there, you know, including the ones that killed his parents that shaped him into who he was. He's classically got this no kill code because he thinks that once you cross that line, there's no coming back. It's not like I could just, oh, well, he needs to go, but everybody else, I'll just, you know, throw him in Arkham. It's once you make that choice to cross that line, there's no coming back from it. So Harry has this emotional burden to carry because, like you said, everyone risked their lives and some gave their lives to protect him. And now his unwillingness to strike a deadly blow may have just been enough to give the bad guys the edge. So Harry's feeling guilty that using Expelliarmus may have revealed his identity. Do you think he's taken on too much responsibility here?
There's a lot of emotions going on right at the moment, but I feel like when he can actually unpack it, even right now, he doesn't really feel bad about using Expelliarmus because he did not want to kill Stan. He didn't want that on his conscience.
I figured that he probably is feeling a little bit of it now once everybody in the room is kind of like, you did what?
But it also gave him away and put all of everyone's sights on him, made him the target.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
In a way, he's probably not feeling guilty. He's like, well,
that's what he should put on him. That's what he should tell him. Oh, okay. You didn't want me to do that?
But then they came after me,
you know, and you guys got to escape. Yeah, somebody's missing an ear.
I mean, who knows who survived because he did that?
Yeah,
because Voldemort turned around and came to chase him. And I feel that's the classic hero. Like, the hero is going to want to face the danger so that his friends don't have to.
I agree. And there's very much... I heard John Lithgow, who's going to be playing Dumbledore in the HBO series that's going to come out Christmas 2026, I believe. We've already seen the first trailers for it come out. It looks just like the movies. Everybody's like, oh, it looks just like the movies. Like, what do you want it to look like, friend?
Like, same source material.
Yeah, it's the same source material.
They pick up different books. It's the same book.
But he was talking about how the thing that drew him to this character he's saying that this is probably going to be my last big role in my life.
Well, because it's going to take a while.
Yeah, and he's in his late 70s, I think. But the dynamic of these books is that there is pure good and there is pure evil. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, things get a little gray, but for the most part,
It's war.
You've got the right side and the wrong side. It's just like World War II. You know, the U.S. dropped atomic bombs and killed so many, you know, innocent people. But we were the good guys in that war. You know, the other option would be that, you know, Hitler takes over the world slowly but surely. So war sucks. It's horrible. Bad things are going to happen and people are going to do sometimes immoral things in order to make sure that so many more immoral things don't happen as a result of that. But he says the thing that drew him to the role was that there was, no matter how you feel about the author, she wrote these in such a way that there is people that stand up for the little people, people that stand up for the disenfranchised, people that stand up for to fight back against evil. There's real heroes and there's real villains in this. And there are things in here that make it more real, but there's also kind of the fantasy aspect of it, that we can get lost in these characters because they are, we know what the good side is and we know what the bad side is, if that makes sense. The conversation then shifts to Harry's strange wand behavior during the battle with Voldemort, and this is really unusual, not fully understood by anyone at the Burrow.
Nobody really even believes it. They just dismiss it.
Yeah.
As you don't really understand what happened because it was such a stressful moment.
Right.
You were under duress and you can't remember clearly what happened.
Ollivander's name comes up as someone who might be able to explain what happened, but Ollivander is currently missing.
He's busy.
Which is another mystery to be solved. Throughout the chapter, though, Molly moves from person to person, tending to injuries, offering comfort. How is Molly able to keep it all together in the face of death, in the face of permanent injuries to her children, and everything that's being dumped on her? She's Paula Rhino.
She is. but she's also been through this already. Like, she didn't have children then, which is making that immensely harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I was actually, so when they divided up in the previous chapter, I was kind of surprised of which son Arthur went with.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like he would go with his youngest son.
Yeah.
And I was a little surprised. Like, I would feel like as a father, you would want to go with one of your children, obviously. And you would go with your youngest because you would think he would have the least likely,
mm-hmm.
the least experience and capability.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a little odd that they didn't pair it that way. I don't know. Maybe Mad-Eye just said it and everybody went with it. But I just thought that was a little odd. And I know he's not the baby. Jenny's the baby. Mm-hmm. But he is the baby for the boys.
Yeah, for sure.
And that does count for something. And I don't know. I just thought that was a little weird that Arthur didn't go with Ron.
To me, it was really spoke to the character of Molly Weasley and the fact that she was able to, in the face of so much stuff happening to her immediate family,
mm-hmm.
she's still caring about everybody else first. And that's Paula Rhino right there. You know, my personal well-being is way down the list to everybody else's.
Well, like I said, she's kind of, you know, she's been through this end of the world scenario before.
Mm-hmm.
And she has been with the Order before and she kind of knows what it takes. Yes, her kids are involved this time, but I feel like in that moment, there was enough that she could focus on what I need to do now that she couldn't focus on
mm-hmm.
the stress, really.
Yeah.
Like,
And that's probably a good mechanism. Keep yourself busy.
Jenny was when they showed up, Jenny was probably like, oh, thank God somebody is here to distract her now. Because before, she was probably just sitting there staring at that clock where mm-hmm. they were all in mortal peril.
Yeah.
And, you know, then once people started showing up, I feel like she was like, good, I have things I need to do. I need to take care of Hagrid. I need to take care of this. I need to take care of that.
It's really a different Burrow that we're used to seeing. Normally this is a place of warmth and laughter and love, and right now it feels very subdued and kind of heavy. The conversations are quieter, the usual sense of safety is gone, and by the end of the chapter we really have a tone that's definitely darker than it had been at any point in these books, and the sense of vulnerability for our favorite characters is very clear. And I feel like almost every chapter that we've read lately, even going back to the end of book six, can be like kind of construed as, oh, this is the turning point in the book. Even if you go back to when Cedric dies, oh, this is the turning point. This is where it gets
darker.
And then it just gets worse.
Because even
Dumbledore is gone. And then now, you know, one of the Weasley boys is getting body parts blown off, and Hedwig is gone, and Mad-Eye is gone. And it just seems like it just, when we think we've hit rock bottom, we dig a little deeper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right that the graveyard scene and Cedric is the turning point. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, before that, we were playing silly Triwizard tournament games, you know?
Yeah.
And Voldemort would pop up and be a nuisance every once in a while. And
then he would, silly Voldemort.
Yeah, go on.
He's in the back
away.
Of some
we'll
guy's
see you later.
Head.
We'll see you later.
I see you under the turban. I see you.
But yeah, so we turned the corner, and now we are on a kind of a downhill slide.
Mm-hmm. It really feels like we're kind of upping the stakes every chapter.
Mm-hmm.
A couple other things before we wrap up here. I thought it was interesting how the different characters kind of cope with trauma in this chapter, particularly Harry, Molly, and George. If you talk a little bit about any of those or all of those, how each processed what was happening, and do you think that's similar to how people in the real world deal with bad things happening differently?
Well, yeah, everybody deals with it different. And we're used to Harry kind of like shutting down and wanting to shut everybody out and go off on his own.
Mm-hmm. And that's one
way to protect everybody,
right,
too.
One way of processing.
That's kind of his thing. Molly's trying to just keep busy and take care of everybody else.
That's another way.
And she's putting Band-Aids on all the leaky spots, sticking her finger in, trying to keep the ship afloat.
Yep.
George, you know, I love Fred and George, and I don't know if they're always about the jokes, and I don't know
even now,
purely his coping mechanism is like, I'm not going to care, and we'll just make fun of this, or if he's doing it to help everybody else out.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about me. I'm fine. Look, it's fine. I can make jokes. It's not a big deal. And I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not. He got hurt, but it's not a big deal. And Molly does say, it's fine. You're alive.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. But yeah, I was a little curious. I was like, is this truly how he feels, or is he doing this to...
That's a good point.
You know, make everybody else feel better.
Like, yeah, you don't want to, if you see that your mom is already distraught, you don't want to add to that.
No.
So, but I thought it was really kind of interesting, like you said, how all the different ways that these characters that we love are processing what's happening. It's very much a mirror to what the way people process grief in the real world. I mean, some people just bury themselves in their work.
Mm-hmm.
And try to keep themselves busy.
Stay busy.
Some people get isolated and don't leave the house for months. Some people laugh it off. I mean, I see kids all the time at school that they get in trouble and they smile about it. And it's not because they're evil. Well, some of them might be.
Says a little bit.
But it's because they're nervous, or they're overwhelmed by what's happening, and they don't know how to process that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they process it by trying to, I'm not in trouble. I'm happy right now. You know, it's different for everybody. So, you know, like
some ways are healthier than others.
Yeah.
But for sure. But everybody still has their own way.
I mean, some people need to talk to somebody about it. You know, some people need to be angry about it.
If you need some time to yourself, that's fine. But like you were saying, for an extended period of time, no, we're crossing over into unhealthy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
We talk about the betrayal.
Go ahead.
So when I really enjoyed reading this chapter, mm-hmm. and we got in, I opened the book and I started, and we're at this weird place and we're crashing into a farm, and I'm like, what is going on? Because that doesn't really happen in the movies. Mm-hmm. And we know you got to chop stuff out for a movie, speed it up mm-hmm. for the movie. But, you know, we skip the whole port key thing. They're just like, they just land at the burrow. Everybody just kind of pops in real quick, one after the other. It feels much, much faster than in the book when you're reading it.
Yeah.
Even when you're listening to the audiobook on 2x speed. It feels much faster in the movie. And this way, we really got to process everything that was happening. Where I feel like in the movie, you don't even know where to look. Where to focus. Things are just happening. People are popping in. In the movie, I do remember they like show Lupin get really mad and stick the thing with Harry, grab him and ask him questions, and then the thing with Kingsley, like it's happening in the background, but you're more focused on George and the ear and what's going on. Like the movie, I feel like it's harder to process it all and really feel every moment of it. Where in the book, since you're having to read the words of what's going on, you're able to absorb it all. But they kept talking about who betrayed us. Voldemort definitely knew the date, who did it, and they all kind of want to believe it's Mundungus, but then they rule that out. And this was the part that I totally forgot. And then Harry notices that Hagrid's over in the corner looking very guilty.
Yeah.
And then Harry just shuts it down and is like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whoever did it by accident. They didn't mean to do it.
Mm-hmm. And it would not be the first time that Hagrid had done that.
No. Well-meaning
of characters in this story, sometimes things just happen to Hagrid.
We know that Snape told Voldemort the date. So Snape knew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the time, we didn't know if the order fed him false information because he's still helping them, or was he not helping them, or whatever. Now we kind of know. He knows where the weak link is. Mm-hmm. Snape is well aware of how to get information out of Hagrid.
Mm-hmm.
And he met up with Hagrid and didn't say who he was and got Hagrid drunk and talking and whatever. And even if Hagrid just said, oh, I'm busy next Thursday night, then it's like, okay, I know what day you're free.
Sure.
And what day you're not free, and what day things are happening.
Yeah.
But then that also made Lupin mad, because he said, "You're just like James. You're unwilling to see that one of your friends might betray you,
almost to a fault."
And that's what got Lily and James killed.
Yeah. So if you had to choose one central theme for this chapter, it could be sacrifice, it could be guilt, loss, trust. What would it be?
Well, I feel like trust, but that might just be because we were just talking about the betrayal and the...
But that's, I mean, it's kind of what led to everything happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an issue of trust, and that led to the attack happening because information got out that wasn't supposed to. And now we're kind of dealing with the fallout of that. And there was a lot of, we didn't even talk about when each person would show up at the burrow, they had a wand in their face saying, tell me something that only you would know, you know, to prove that you're not, you know, one of the Death Eaters having drank some polyjuice potion. So I think trust is a good one, because it kind of, that information getting out was the reason for the attack. When everybody shows up at the burrow, there's the issue with not
proving,
trusting who they
who
were.
Who you are, yeah.
And then
Harry choosing to trust.
Yeah, at the end, for sure. So I think that's a good one. Anything else you want to say about chapter 5? Or do you want to get to an email?
Email.
Email. This one comes to us from Sharon right here in St. Louis, Missouri.
Hey, Sharon.
She sent us an email to broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. You can do that too, or you can send us a message on Facebook or Blue Sky or X or whatever you want. But email is way most people
Instagram.
Get a hold of us.
We're on Instagram too.
Oh, yeah, Instagram at Broomsticks B Podcast, I believe. You can send Jess a message on Instagram.
Maybe I'll get it.
Maybe you'll get it. I don't know. If you send it to broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com, I'll definitely
I will get it eventually. It's just Jennifer did it one time, and I did not get it in a timely manner.
Sharon writes, "Hi, Dan and Jess. I'm loving the show and so excited for Dan to finish the final book. I've been wanting to email in for a long time, but couldn't think of a good question to ask until now.
Ooh.
If you could change one rule or system in the wizarding world, what would it be? Mine would be to fix the justice system and overhauling how the Ministry of Magic handles crime. Stop sending people to Azkaban without due process."
Yeah, or you
and
know
we've
what?
Talked about that.
You know what? Maybe there just needs to be another prison.
Yeah.
For like...
like a minimum security one for like jaywalkers and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, here we have the worst murderers in wizarding history.
A prison that's a little more chill and is not run by dementors.
And then we also have people who had an animal that they weren't supposed to have. You're both going to go to the same prison where they literally suck the soul from your body.
Yeah.
And drive you mad. So I think that's a good one. I do have a few here if you want to think about it.
Go for it.
We got to install some safety protocols at that school. We can't have, you know, people either dying or nearly dying every single year at this school. We gotta install some security cameras, maybe hire some security, maybe put some metal detectors in there.
Babe, tech and magic don't mesh.
That's actually comes to another one of my things. I think we need to have more Muggle technology integration. I think that there are a lot of things from the Muggle world, technology advancement wise, that could help the wizarding community. Emails, text messages, both faster than owls.
Not as messy, too.
It's safer than popping your floating head into a fire like Sirius did. So I think integrating some Muggle technology wouldn't hurt. I think something Hermione was already spearheading, ending house elf servitude. It's comparable to slavery in the United States in our history.
Mm-hmm.
We need to address the blood status discrimination issue, you know, like our Civil Rights Act.
You sound like you're running for office.
Anti-discrimination. we need to address the blood status discrimination. It's my JFK. We have to have more safety protocols at the school. It's either by JFK or the mayor from The Simpsons. We have to end house elf servitude. But yeah, there's way too much discrimination in the wizarding world. They need to have their version of like the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
That we've got to stop, you know, treating people differently based on their, you know, whether they're half blood or pure blood. I think they need to be a little more lenient with the underage magic restrictions, because there's really inconsistent reinforcement of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I mean, if you grow up, I feel like if you grow up in a witch yeah. wizard house, like if your yeah. parents were witches and wizards, then it's on them to police you.
Right. I don't just remove them. It's not like we don't want to give 10-year-olds guns, and you know, as a comparison to our society, but teach young wizards and witches about how to use magic responsibly. I don't
so
think
there needs
any,
to be a school before Hogwarts.
I think there should be. I absolutely think there should be.
Or tutors? I don't know.
Yeah,
for like Muggleborns,
right? And then maybe you can have, you know, the tutor, as long as the tutor is present, you know, like a driving instructor. Mm-hmm. Where you can get like your driving permit and you can, you know, drive with an adult for 6 months. And then even when you turn 16, you have your permit. You can drive, but only with a licensed driver. until you get like your actual driver's license. I think there needs to be more of a like steps, a hierarchy, and not just say like, oh yeah, you're 11, go to school, go to wizard school. Like what? Yeah. Especially if you're in a, I think it applies to both wizard and witch families and muggle families. If it's, if you're a, in a muggle family, I don't think you, it's got to be even more jarring for you to learn that you're a wizard or a witch at age 11. So I think there should probably be something before that to prepare you and your family mm-hmm. for that. But if you're in a wizard or witch family, you're seeing all these things happening. You know already about that. And you can't do anything until you're, you know, 11 years old when you can go to school. And then even then, you can only do it at school.
So, but we already established that they put like a trace on the house.
Yeah.
And any magic in that house triggers it.
Uh-huh.
Because when Dobby did it, Harry got in trouble. They couldn't tell who did it.
So maybe we need to, you know,
make that a little better.
Make it a little bit more accurate.
So I don't think they're on witch family houses mm-hmm. because they would never know who was doing it. And the parents can do magic. So I think they just leave it up to the parents to police it. And some parents might let their kids do magic and some might not.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's really not fair. Mm-hmm. You know, that these kids who come from wizarding backgrounds kind of go into Hogwarts with this advantage where everybody should kind of be on a level playing field. I mean, that's what, you know, IEPs in education are all about, you know, for people who are at a disadvantage.
There are kindergartners that come in that already know their letters and their colors and this because the parents do the work at home. And there are kindergartners come in who have no clue about anything.
I agree with that. But
so I think it's the same kind of thing.
That's 5 years old.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, yeah, you've got an advantage because your parents have been reading to you and parents have been kind of your de facto teachers for your first 5 years. But we catch them so young in either preschool or kindergarten that, okay, even if you didn't have any of that stuff, we've still got enough time to get you up to speed. But when you're 11, you know, that's a lot different than coming in school when you're 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. Anything else? Did I kind of put any brain worms?
You didn't mention laundromats.
I'm big on, you know, I think everybody already knows my
stance.
My stance on laundromats. Anything else kind of pop in your head while I was rambling?
I completely interpreted the question differently.
Okay.
And I don't know. I mean, I listened to you. I agree with most of everything you said.
Okay.
But when I first heard the question, I was thinking more of, I guess this is just my writer brain, of like from the writing standpoint, what could we have done in this world when creating it? And it's kind of the same like you're thinking, but
I'm genuinely curious to hear
I think
this, though.
The magic system in Harry Potter isn't well defined.
Okay.
I think it needs to be a little tighter when it's defined. And in most fantasy stories, there's usually like a cost. Like mm-hmm. you can't just run around doing magic. You get tired and you have to eat a whole bunch because it's like burning calories. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's usually a cost to it. There's usually a give and take. Mm-hmm. And in Harry Potter, there doesn't seem to be anything like that. You could just do magic all day long and you're fine.
Yeah. I mean, even like the Little Mermaid, you know, there was a cost
to the magic
there. Yeah.
So, and I don't know how exactly you would do that. But maybe you could just work it in that, you know, the kids, I mean, they do have to go and they get the buffet table of food every night.
Mm-hmm.
And so my brain.
Get a lot of carbs in there. Yeah.
My brain from
and a lot of
reading.
Just, a lot of it's just junk.
Yeah. From reading other fantasies.
A lot of
though,
pastries, very pastry heavy.
I feel like I'm like, oh, okay, here's where they have to like replenish all their energy because of the magic they used all day. It's never stated, but I just kind of make that connection in my brain because of other what it is in other stories.
It's sugar. Sugar is the cost. You need to replenish the sugar. Not just food, because they're just a lot of the stuff that pops up that I remember from the movies is just desserts.
Desserts. Well, they're kids. That's what they want to eat.
I guess.
And they got to get them fed. I don't know. There's a lot of meats.
Meats are good.
And I remember the big, like, turkey legs.
There are. You got to have your protein.
Yeah.
But it's very carb heavy.
Carbs, I think. Meats.
A lot
sweets.
Of bread, which is essentially just.
Not really any vegetables.
Yeah. No, no. Maybe mix some vegetables in there. So you think we need to bring the food pyramid?
But if
pyramid?
They can choose, they're not going to choose to eat the vegetables. They're
going
to choose.
Well, you know what?
To eat.
When you're at school,
maybe
and you
get
the school
get
lunch.
Maybe you should get a plate that is, like, designed for you. And once your plate is clean, then you can get your dessert.
And that's kind of, I mean, school lunches, this is what we're having.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I remember kids going through the lines and they say, you have to take one fruit or one vegetable.
Yeah.
Even if you don't eat it.
You have to
They're
take
required
it.
By law for you to take it. It's so weird.
Yeah, working in the school cafeteria, it's not for the faint of heart. It's see all that food that gets wasted.
No.
It's rough.
No, shout out to the men and women that
work in the cafeteria.
That work in any capacity in the cafeteria. Either making the food, prepping the food,
and then
the kids who are eating the food on lunch duty, you know.
And when COVID hit and we switched from the plastic trays, the reusable trays, to the styrofoam trays, I mean, I just, it hurt. It hurt.
Yeah.
I was like, all this food is going to waste. Now all this stuff going in the landfill. Oh, my God. Just
it's so much.
So wasteful.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Somebody needs to get on that. Because they say that you can't reuse it. You can't, like, reuse. Like, once a kid takes a fruit cup, they don't open it.
Yeah.
That fruit cup cannot be saved. It cannot be given to another student. It cannot.
So we would.
I have too.
Right off kids' trays.
Yeah,
we would make a pile. The nurse would come in and get it because there's some kids that have to eat something with their medicine. But you're not supposed to.
Exactly.
So we would get in trouble for it. We wouldn't do it for a month or two. And then we'd start doing it again.
Because it's stupid. Because
it is stupid. So stupid. Especially the one we always, was the breakfast. They would come in with 2 minutes left for breakfast and get their five things. Mm-hmm. They'd eat one of them, and then the rest would just all get thrown away.
At my old school, they used to pile up all the stuff instead of letting the kids throw it away. They're like, no, I'll take that. They would pile it all up on a table and take a picture of it as, like, proof that, you know,
of the waste.
This is the stupidity of it. This is the personification of the stupidity of it.
Those like cereal bars,
we
would take those and just throw them in the kids' backpacks. Like, take it, have it for snack later.
That's a great idea.
Have it for snack later.
Not supposed to.
Nope,
but
not supposed to.
But
gonna get in trouble
idea.
But
it's
we did it anyway
idea.
Because
fire me for feeding kids,
for feeding them.
Fire me.
It was his food.
I
he took
you.
It
you
I said you. It was his and nobody else could have it. So I put it in his backpack so he could have it later.
You'd get
so much trouble.
So much bad press for, you know, firing people for
feeding children.
So we're gonna bring the food pyramid into Hogwarts.
And make sure those
we're
kids are
get
eating
healthy,
properly.
Healthy, balanced meals.
Yeah.
And we're gonna use disposable trays or
No. Well, you're freeing all the house elves, so
that's right. We're going to pay them, though. We're going to give them health care.
Okay. So then, we got to keep them in dishes.
Yeah, we're
going to
give them
dishes.
Dental.
Keep
vision.
Keep them in a job.
Yeah, we're going to give
them.
We're
using
real
plates.
401k. We're redoing the system.
Okay.
We're redoing the system.
Sorry, Sharon.
Sharon, we love you.
This
Thank
is what
you
happens
question.
When you ask us
I
questions.
I thought it was a great conversation. Don't apologize. I thought it was fantastic.
Minus the rant we went on about the education system.
I think
system.
Sharon, if she's listened to all these episodes, she knows.
She knows what she's getting.
She knows what she's getting into. So thank you, Sharon. Anybody else, send us an email, broomsticks.butterbeer@gmail.com. Follow us on Hex. I know we're not really So active on the social medias, but that's just because we're old.
What? We're not old. I mean, we are old, but we're not old. We might not be,
but this side of the table right here definitely feels much more than their age. On X at BroomsticksB, on Blue Sky at BroomsticksB, on Instagram at BroomsticksB Podcast, Broomsticks and Butterbeer on Facebook. Follow us on there. That way you know that you're getting the episodes as soon as they drop. But subscribe to the podcast too. That means as soon as it goes up, it's in your phone, it's in your tablet, it's in your computer, it's in your car, it's in your brain. You're vibing with us.
It's going straight to their brain.
Straight to their brain. That's the future of podcasts. Straight to your brain.
I mean, probably, but not yet.
So you're driving down the road, you're listening to your tunes, all of a sudden, hey, welcome back to Broomsticks and Butterbeer.
We just go and live in their brain.
Catch you off guard and you swerve off the road.
Not good.
So thank you everybody for downloading, listening, and subscribing. We really, really appreciate it. If you're in the Midwest and you're listening to this when it actually drops, I'm going to be at Missouri Comic Con next weekend, April 11th. The con is April 11th and 12th. A lot of big names are going to be there, including me, who will be walking around in my Broomsticks and Butterbeer shirt. So if you see me, tap me on the shoulder. And I don't charge for pictures or autographs. Just does. So this might be your opportunity.
It's not true.
To get out cheaply. Before we go, I want to give a shout out to my coworker Becky, who went to Universal Studios over spring break and rocked the Broomsticks and Butterbeer shirt all weekend. So giving us some free advertisement in Orlando, Florida. So Becky, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for joining us on this journey. Special shout out. Go ahead.
We did go to the Harry Potter store in Chicago while we were up there too. We talked about Bruce. That's us. We talked about C2E2, but we didn't talk about the Harry Potter store.
I just figured because we had been there before and we had talked about it at our last visit. But yeah, we did make the pilgrimage anytime we're in Chicago.
Your brother hadn't been, so gotta we go to the definitely had to.
Two of my brothers. It was really cool. We got all four of the Rhino Boys were in the same place at the same time. There's even a cool picture of all of us crowded around a NFL Blitz arcade game at the headquarters bar up there in Chicago, which is another great place. If you're ever in Chicago, I think it's called Headquarters Barcade.
Barcade, yep.
99% of the games in there are free.
Yeah. There's a couple. There's a claw game.
Yeah, and Papa Shot basketball, I think. Yeah.
And
photo booths, things like that. But they have so many console games, so many like brand new pinball games, like ones that normally cost like $2 a game to play. Mm-hmm. It's just free. You just go in there and
stop a guy. He was trying to put money. He's like, "Where does the money go?"
Like, and you're like, "It goes to me. Thank
it's
you.
It's free."
I just wander around and
I just wander and collect it.
Money, and that buys you all of your drinks
just,
for the evening.
Take my phone out and tap it against the machine. And go, you're good.
That buys you all your Sprites for the evening.
Yeah.
So it works out for everybody.
Everybody. Everybody wins.
So special shout out to our inner circle, Jennifer, Catherine, Amelia, Jane, Ronnie, Anastasia, Kelly, Olivia, Jenny, and Emma. Thank you, everybody, for continuing this journey with us. We really, 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 really appreciate it. And we'll be back next time to talk about Chapter 6 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. Every time I say Harry Potter and, then all seven covers pop into my head. And I'm like, oh, which one are we on? Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. That's the one where it's like kind of the orangish
orangey
cover.
Yeah.
Is that right? All right. For a colorblind person, that's...
Not helpful.
No, it's not really helpful, but I'm glad I got it right. Be a wizard, be a witch, be a muggle, be a squib, but don't be a jerk.
Or a git.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Gather around wizards, it's time to explore. A world full of magic, we're opening the door. With Dan and Jessica, we're here for the ride. On Broomsticks and Butterbeer, come along for the glide.
Chapter by chapter, we're diving so deep through Hogwarts halls where the secrets creep. From the Sorting Hat to the wizarding fights, potions and spells and those magical nights. With our cups full of butterbeer, we analyze the lore, the friendships that blossom, the battles and more. Every word written, we take with delight, bringing Harry's world back into the light. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. From the Quidditch games to the dark magic's call, we'll take on each chapter, seeing how they enthrall. Hermione's wisdom, Ron's loyal fight, we'll discuss every twist, make the dark turn bright. With an open heart and a curious mind, we'll unlock the secrets that are waiting to find. So grab your broomstick and settle in tight. It's time for the journey we're starting tonight. Broomsticks and butterbeer, let the magic flow. Join the discussion, there's so much to know. With Dan and Jessica, let your spirit fly. In the wizarding world, we'll always reply. Through the pages we wander side by side. In every adventure, we take it in stride. The laughter and lessons, the love and the pain. With each chapter shared, we'll never be the same. Let's raise our glasses to the stories we share. In the world of Potter, there's magic everywhere. From Diagon Alley to the Forbidden Forest, exploring this universe, we're never the worst. Every twist and turn, oh, it makes us feel the power of friendship, that's the real deal. So don't miss a moment, let's savor the fun. With broomsticks and butterbeer, the magic's just begun. So here's to the chapters, both old and new. With every spell cast, a world that feels true. On broomsticks and butterbeer, we'll see you next time. With laughter and magic, we're full.